Thank you for joining us for another podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Commonwealth Club. My name is Joe Epstein. I'm a past chair of the Commonwealth Club's Board of Governors and your chair for today's program. You can find the Commonwealth Club online at commonwealthclub.org or on Facebook and Twitter and on the club's YouTube channel. I'd like to acknowledge that in our audience today, we are pleased to welcome Chancellor Gary May of the University of California at Davis, Chancellor Kim Wilcox of University of California, Riverside, Chancellor Henry Yang of UC Santa Barbara, and Chancellor Sam Hawgood of UCSF. Also joining us are Maria Anguiano and Paul Monhay of the UC Board of Regents. I also want to let you know that the moderator of today's question period will be Dr. Hans Johnson, director of the Higher Education Center at the Public Policy Institute of California, PPIC. It is now my pleasure to introduce today's distinguished speaker, Janet Napolitano, president of the University of California, as well as former U.S. Secretary of Homeland Security and the former governor of Arizona. Ms. Napolitano is the first woman to serve in each of these offices. President Napolitano is here to commemorate the 150th anniversary of the University of California and to discuss the future of the university, as well as the general challenges that are facing higher education. The University of California was founded in March of 1868 when California Governor Henry Haight signed the Organic Act, setting in motion the audacious idea that California should have a great public university, a university that would serve equally the children of immigrants and settlers, landowners, and industrial barons. UC Berkeley opened its door a year later with 40 students and 10 faculty members. Its first graduating class, known as the 12 Apostles, included a future California governor, a U.S. congressman, a mayor, a bank president, two UC regents, a businessman, an attorney, an engineer, a math professor, a clergyman, and of course, a rancher in those days. Today, UC has more than 1.8 million living alumni and has educated generations of Californians. Janet Napolitano was named the 20th president of the University of California in 2013. She leads a university system with 10 campuses, 5 medical centers, 3 affiliated national laboratories, and a statewide agricultural and natural resources program. So please welcome today's guest, Janet Napolitano.
All right, good afternoon. Thank you, Joe, for the warm introduction. And I'd like to echo the welcome to Chancellors Hawgood, May, Wilcox, and Yang, Regents Anguiano and Monhay, the leaders of the University of California's Academic Senate, UC alumni and other members and friends of the UC community, and members of the public who have joined us to mark the 150th anniversary of the University of California. I also want to give special thanks to the Commonwealth Club of California for hosting us today. It's wonderful to be back here and to celebrate such a momentous occasion. Some of you may recall that I gave my first speech as president of the University of California at the Commonwealth Club almost 5 years ago. It was October 30th of 2013. That year, President Barack Obama was inaugurated for his second term. The 49ers actually made it to the Super Bowl. And Facebook was still cool, I think. I was one of California's newest residents, and I faced the enormous task of laying out my vision for the state's crown jewel public research university system, the University of California. And in forming that vision, I'd studied up on the story of the university. And some of you may know that story well, but many Californians do not. In 1862, while the United States was engulfed in the Civil War, President Abraham Lincoln would have been forgiven if he chose to focus solely on the tasks in front of him: defeating the Confederacy, ending slavery, and reuniting the country. But in his wisdom, President Lincoln chose to look beyond the Civil War. If the United States survived this crisis, President Lincoln saw an opportunity to make the Union even stronger. He signed a law, the Morrill Land Grant Act, which gave land to the states for the purpose of building public institutions of education and research. And California's early settlers saw an opportunity then too, and they seized it. They got to work building a new university. And although they looked to institutions on the East Coast and in Europe for inspiration, they were intent on creating a different kind of university, one more accessible and egalitarian than Oxford or Columbia. Daniel Coit Gilman, one of UC's founding fathers, summed it up this way, and I quote, "It is not the University of Berlin, nor of New Haven, which we are to copy, but it is the university of this state. It must be adapted to this people, to their public and private schools, to their peculiar geographical position, to the requirements of their new society and their undeveloped resources." End quote. At the time of the university's establishment in 1868, no other institution resembled what early Californians had in mind for their university: a top-notch higher education institution accessible to all who qualify academically, regardless of their income or their background. Indeed, the University of California has always been ahead of the curve when it comes to breaking barriers and expanding opportunity. 50 years before American women secured the right to vote, the University of California was already admitting women. 8 of them attended classes at UC in that first year. Before the Civil Rights Act of 1964 became the law of the land, Roy Overstreet became the first African American to receive a degree from UC Riverside, and he went on to become the country's first black oceanographer. And more than 2 decades before the U.S. Supreme Court legalized same-sex marriage in all 50 states, the University of California opened its first LGBT resource center, the first of its kind on any California campus. Perhaps one of the most emblematic stories of UC's unique approach to creating opportunity is the one about a boy from Bakersfield. He was of humble beginnings. His father immigrated to the U.S. from Norway, and he worked on the Southern Pacific rail yards to support the family. His son followed in the father's hard-working footsteps, taking odd jobs to save money for college. He spent his summers sweating on an ice wagon, delivering newspapers, and driving a groceries mule team. Occasionally, to escape the blistering heat, he would sneak into the county courthouse and watch the trials in progress. And then in August of 1908, this young man became the first kid from hardscrabble East Bakersfield to enroll at UC Berkeley. And from there, you can probably guess the rest of the story. Earl Warren went on to become Alameda County's district attorney, governor of California, and one of the most revered chief justices in the history of the U.S. Supreme Court. A California boy from a working-class family who seized the opportunity to pursue a UC education became the Chief Justice whose court unanimously declared that racial segregation in our public schools was unconstitutional, paving the way for many more Americans to pursue their own educational dreams. Stories like this of a UC education opening doors to unimagined possibilities define the University of California. They have shown us time and again that the opportunity to attend the University of California and earn a college degree can fundamentally change Californians' lives for the better, and they, in turn, change the lives of others still. In the 150 years since UC was established, we have honored the original vision that makes these life-changing moments possible. We've done it with steadfast commitment to academic excellence, aiming to recruit and retain the best faculty in their fields. And we've done it with an intentional approach to ensuring that every Californian has a shot at a UC education. That commitment to creating opportunity has paid off in the form of social and economic mobility for the individual. 42% of our undergraduates, 42%, are the first in their family to attend a four-year college or university. And just as I reflected today on the inspiring story of Earl Warren, I am confident that UC's president, 150 years from now, will be able to look back on the successes and breakthroughs of today's UC students, including our first-generation college students. The economic mobility of the individual has in turn resulted in economic benefits to local communities, the state, and the nation. After all, it was a UC Berkeley faculty member, Eugene W. Hilgard, whose research helped farmers remove salts from Central Valley soils, turning barren land into a $45 billion agricultural industry. Today, California produces the majority of our nation's fruits, vegetables, and nuts, and not to mention all that great wine. And that commitment to creating opportunity has fostered the creativity, the passion, and knowledge necessary to make new discoveries and solve problems big and small for the common good. For example, when UCSF clinicians and researchers started the nation's first outpatient AIDS clinic and inpatient ward at San Francisco General Hospital, it signified the beginning of a multidisciplinary effort to fight this devastating disease. And after a UCLA alumnus, Ralph J. Bunche, negotiated the armistice agreements that ended the Arab-Israeli War of 1948, he became the first African-American to win a Nobel Prize for his efforts to bring peace to a volatile region. Today, UC researchers continue to align their work with the needs of the public by endeavoring to cure cancer, working to address climate change, developing an earthquake warning system, to list but three examples. So this year is UC's 150th anniversary, its sesquicentennial, so it's natural to reminisce about these past accomplishments. And it's tempting to look at the university's stunning story of success and think that we can all sit back and simply admire what California has achieved with its public research university system. But rather than resting on our laurels, these accomplishments should spur us to further action. Knowing how transformative a UC education can be for the individual and for society at large, it's incumbent upon us to help more Californians become part of the opportunity story at UC. And doing so is no easy feat. We have no special formula that will conjure up more funding, no silver bullet that can streamline the diversity pipeline, no quick or easy solution to any of the challenges we must overcome. But we do know that a UC education translates into a lifetime of opportunity. So this afternoon, I'd like to share with you three specific steps that the University of California, in partnership with the state of California, can take to put a UC degree into the hands of more Californians. The first step involves community college transfers. Nearly one-third of UC's undergraduates begin their higher education path at a community college. These students succeed at the same rate as those who arrive at UC as undergraduates, and they contribute to the diversity of experiences among our student body. Within a decade of completing their UC degrees, over half of those who transferred from a community college and who work in California are earning salaries that place them among the top third of income earners in the state. And their personal stories are very inspiring. There's Jesse Silva, whose journey over the past 6 years has taken him through military service in Afghanistan, to hiking the Pacific Crest Trail, to Cabrillo College in Aptos, California, and eventually to UC Santa Cruz. This June, he will graduate with a double major in philosophy and politics. And there's Daniela Estrada, the UC Irvine political science major who graduated last June with high honors and was named a Fulbright and a Truman Scholar. You might not have guessed that Daniela was also a first-generation college student whose father was forced to quit school as a young child to pick tobacco in the fields of Mexico. So early in my presidency, I made a commitment to increase the number of community college transfer students at UC, students like Jesse and Daniela. We've done so by collaborating closely with our counterparts at the California Community Colleges and working to simplify the transfer process. The efforts have paid off. In the fall of 2017, UC had 6,000 more California Community College transfer students enrolled at our campuses than we did in the fall of 2013 when I first arrived at the university. But this doesn't mean our work is done. We need to take it even further. So today, I'm calling on UC's Academic Senate to determine what it will take to extend a guarantee of admission to all qualifying California Community College transfer students. The guarantee can use the current 21 transfer pathways as a key building block. Successful completion of a pathway, along with obtaining the requisite GPA, should entitle a community college student to a guaranteed place in the UC system. Harmonizing the current transfer admission agreements, the TAGs, and allowing prospective students to have more than one transfer admission agreement should also facilitate transfer. And where the community college associate's degree for transfer equates to or exceeds the major preparation contained in a UC transfer pathway, it should be considered for acceptance in lieu of a pathway for purposes of a guarantee. I'm asking the Academic Senate to review these and other proposals to facilitate transfer and transfer preparation so that the guarantees are in place by the fall of 2019 at the outset of the university's 151st academic year. This would be a major leap for the University of California, one that must be implemented carefully to achieve its desired effect. And I am committed to working closely with leaders at the California Community Colleges, at our own Academic Senate, and other stakeholders to make sure we get this right. Now, of course, many of UC's undergraduates enroll as freshmen. And in keeping with UC's mission to serve Californians, the university has gone to great lengths to increase enrollment of California students over the past several years. Without new enrollment funding from the state. 3 years ago, we made a commitment to enroll an additional 10,000 California students by the 2018-19 academic year. And I'm proud to say that we have already met that goal and that today more Californians study at the University of California than at any point in our history. And importantly, our undergraduate student body is ever more diverse. Nearly one-third of the students who enrolled last fall come from historically underrepresented minority groups. The push to increase enrollment of Californians comes in part because of the great demand for a UC education. Last year, the number of UC admission applications broke the record for the 13th straight year. That same demand also dictates that we do everything we can to help current UC students graduate on time and make room for the next cohort of undergraduates. And that's where step two comes in. Today, I'm calling on UC's chancellors to explore how we can further streamline the degree pipeline and ensure that at least 70% of our undergraduates earn their degrees within 4 years. Raising UC's four-year graduation rate from its current 64% would make room for more undergraduates and generate an additional 32,000 undergraduate degrees between now and 2030. It's almost like adding another campus. Students will also be able to reduce their college costs by moving more quickly into the workforce or to graduate a professional school. I believe we can meet this challenge by expanding access to online education courses, increasing UC's summer session enrollment, encouraging more students to study abroad, and doubling down on our student support services. Once more, we will be conscientious in our approach. We will not diminish UC's academic quality or our students' ability to succeed by forcing a one-size-fits-all educational model. But we will push our university community to widen the definition of what a UC education can look like and provide new ways for California students to earn their degrees in a timely manner. And this brings me to the third step. UC and California must take together. We've been told for some time that our state will soon face a significant shortage of college-educated residents. That's a prospect that should concern every single Californian who cares about the state's future. It demands that we grapple with a complex question. How do we help more Californians achieve the college education we know they need and want? So today, I am asking the state legislature and the next governor of California to work with the university and the California State University to help answer that question. Together, we can tackle the college graduate gap and make sure our state is producing the educated workforce it needs for the decades ahead. Expanding opportunity this way will be a challenging but fruitful endeavor. It's true that those who earn a UC bachelor's degree in California will double their earnings between 2 and 10 years after graduation. But the positive impact of UC alumni and their degrees radiates beyond the individual to the college graduate's family, their local community, the state, and the nation as a whole. It manifests itself in new ideas, stronger communities, and critical jobs filled. Consider that of UC's 2 million alumni, more than 1.2 million are still living and working in California. Their top industries of employment are healthcare, education, engineering, and computer science, all important areas for our state. And consider that 1 in 3 California elected officials are UC alumni. 2 of California's Supreme Court justices, including the Chief Justice, are UC graduates. And nearly 1/2 of the medical students and residents in California are trained at the University of California. And consider that UC alumni lead the way in launching companies that can create jobs for other Californians. In 2017, the data firm PitchBook ranked 5 UC campuses in the top 50 for producing venture capital-backed entrepreneurs. Since 2006, alumni from these 5 campuses, and that's just 5, started more than 2,000 companies and raised more than $36 billion in capital. Now, the effort to address the degree gap will require close collaboration and careful planning on the part of the state's public higher education segments. On UC's end, the solution must not only take into account undergraduate enrollment, but also graduate education. Graduate research stimulates some of California's most vital industries, such as biotechnology, agriculture, and climate science. Increasingly, today's jobs, particularly in the STEM and education fields, require training beyond a bachelor's degree. And recent growth in undergraduate enrollment at UC will almost certainly translate into a greater demand for graduate education in the years ahead. The work to address the degree gap will also require a significant investment by the state to fund critical educational needs. UC is grateful for the state support we've received in recent years, following devastating budget cuts during the Great Recession. But we still do not have sufficient state support to pay for increases in enrollment, the necessary expansion of our campuses, or the growing needs of our students. In fact, UC educates 90,000 more students today than we did in the year 2000, yet our state appropriations have remained flat. Put another way, if UC received the same per-student funding today as we did in 2000, our state appropriation would amount to more than $7 billion instead of the $3.4 billion we currently receive. This, too, should concern every single Californian. A vibrant University of California is critical to the upward trajectory of our state and its people. You've heard snippets today about students, faculty, and alumni whose UC experience made it possible for them to accomplish incredible things and made it possible for the state to reap incredible benefits. But even those who have never stepped foot on a UC campus, if you've ever eaten a strawberry or reached for a glass of wine, used a nicotine patch, or looked at an LED screen, you have been touched by this university and have a stake in preserving this treasure of an institution. Great American strides have always required public investment in the common good, whether it was the GI Bill or the New Deal. Now is the time for Californians to once again invest in the common good and for all of us to partner on a bold plan to expand access to the University of California while sustaining its academic quality and supporting its research excellence. I may be a bit biased, but I believe the University of California is an institution worth investing in and worth fighting for. UC is a special, a daring public experiment that becomes a priceless public good. It belongs to all of us, and every Californian deserves the opportunity to reap its rewards. Our state's early settlers were audacious enough to imagine such an institution. They nurtured their grand idea, molded it, and set it out into the world, and today it has evolved into a university system they likely couldn't have envisioned at the time. A small college in Oakland, California, developed into UC Berkeley, the best public university in the nation, if not the world. The same institution gave rise to a medical college we now call UCSF. The University Farm, better known as UC Davis. The Southern Branch, which today we call UCLA. And the Citrus Experiment Station, now known as UC Riverside. New campuses in Santa Barbara, San Diego, Irvine, and Santa Cruz eventually joined the family. And in 2005, UC was proud to open the first research university of the 21st century in the United States in Merced. We may not know exactly how the next chapter of the UC story will read, but I suspect President Abraham Lincoln would advise us to keep one eye on the present and the other firmly on the horizon. Our task now is to capture the same pioneering spirit of those early Californians, reimagine what the University of California could be in this new age, and pivot toward another century and a half of promise and possibility. And in the words of the motto of the University of California, Fiat Lux, let there be light, and let it shine brightly over the next 150 years. Thank you.
Thank you, President Napolitano. My name is Hans Johnson, and I am the director of the Higher Education Center at the Public Policy of Institute of California. And it's a great pleasure to be here today. I have to start off by saying a PPIC is an empirically based, fact-based policy research center. We try to be nonpartisan and objective, but I am actually one of four generations of graduates from UC Berkeley, with my grandfather,
Go Bears!
My mother and father, myself, and my oldest son. I do have a wayward son who's at Carleton College in Minnesota right now. You gave us a broad sweep of UC and the history of UC, but also gave us some specific challenges that the university is facing today. And I think back when you first came to UC, you were, some would argue, an unorthodox choice, having been a governor of Arizona, and then having been, of course, Secretary of Homeland Security. I'm wondering what initially surprised you when you first came to UC, and how that differed from what you thought you might encounter in a major university system like the one we have here in California.
You know, Hans, I think that what I was most surprised by was the breadth and depth of the University of California. From a research standpoint, from an education standpoint, from a public service standpoint, it's just huge and immensely impactful in California. I think that those early Californians that I mentioned in my talk, they really got it right. That they really got it right that a great state requires a great research university. And I want to pause a moment on the word research, because that is one of the distinguishing characteristics of the University of California. It is the creation of new knowledge. It is pushing forward frontiers in medicine, in engineering, in agriculture, in the humanities and the arts. And there's activities in all those areas underway on all of our campuses. So I was surprised and amazed by just the scale of the University of California. It is really hard to fathom.
You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Listen to thousands of our podcasts on iTunes or Google Play. And when you're in the Bay Area, please join us live for one of our 450 programs each year. You can find us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now, back to our program.
And you get to manage that scale, which is a tremendous challenge, I realize. There are so many issues you touched on that I'd like to follow up with, and we have a number of audience questions. Of course, you might imagine number one is the budget, and being able to afford to go to UC. In our statewide surveys, we find that the number one issue Californians have with our higher education systems, specifically UC and CSU, is concern about tuition and affordability. And yet, as you noted, the state, while there's been a few years of increasing investment, is still nowhere near where we used to be historically. So how do you make the case for UC to the public and maybe more pointedly to leaders in Sacramento?
Well, I think there's no question but that major cuts to the university in the recession. It was almost a 40% cut to the state appropriation to the university. And it's come back, but in very small increments. That presents a huge challenge and puts a huge pressure on tuition. We have to manage our costs in our administration and be as efficient as we can with the dollars that we have. We also have a demand for a quality education. And so to the extent that the state reinvests in the university, it takes pressure off tuition. I will pause a moment on affordability because I know it is a great concern. But too many Californians don't know that if a student comes from a family that makes less than $80,000 a year, they pay no tuition at the University of California. So well over half of our California undergrads pay no tuition or fees. Almost half of our undergraduates actually graduate with no debt. The ones that graduate with debt, and I have my eye on those, but the average amount of debt is right around $20,000. And when you think about it, that's basically the price of a small car. And unlike cars, which depreciate in value the moment you drive them off the lot, a UC education appreciates in value. But we really need to strive to keep that UC education affordable. And that means looking at issues like housing, like food and food security, the other costs of attending university.
So the legislature and the governor, when we have a recession, often feel that there's nowhere to cut, but often in higher education and other areas of the budget that are not protected, either through court orders or through propositions that our citizens have passed that allocate funding to certain services, K-12 and the Prop 98 guarantee, for example. So this makes finding revenue for the university particularly difficult when there's a downturn. Our governor, in his press release or press conference on the budget, warned about his concern about an impending recession sometime in the next year or two. So what do you do to try to protect the university from its vulnerable position, both in Sacramento, but especially here with respect to potential downturns and recessions?
You know, the most we can do is be effective advocates. And this year, for example, we are really joined at the hip with the students at the university, advocating for more funding, advocating for the legislature to essentially buy out what would be the in-state tuition increase, and to pay for that additional enrollment that I mentioned. I find the students are our best advocates, our best spokespeople. There has to be in the state this general recognition that the University of California is an engine of social mobility. It's an engine of innovation, entrepreneurship. It's a job creator. It's an opportunity maker. And that is for the common good. And the common good requires public investment.
We've argued at PPIC that access is tremendously important. You've touched on what the university has done in the last few years to respond to the tremendous demand among students to attend the university by enrolling an additional 10,000 students. How do you keep that going? And I know one concern the university has had, that focus has been on undergraduates, but the university has also been concerned about trying to increase graduate enrollment. So how do you continue to expand on those gains that you've made, and how do you get graduate education to be more of a focus as well?
Yeah, so graduate education is really the secret sauce of the University of California. It's really what distinguishes us as a system from CSU, our PhD programs, the academic research that is conducted. Our graduate students are teaching assistants. They help with that undergraduate enrollment. So it's an incredibly important part of the university. When we approach the state, we are talking both about undergraduate and graduate students, and really making the case for why they deserve public support as well.
Is increasing tuition a way to ensure that you're able to accommodate more students and at the same time ensure a level of quality? And especially if you increase tuition and ensure that lower income and even middle income students don't pay those increases. Is that a viable way for the university to reach those goals, access and quality?
I think raising tuition should be done as the last option for the reasons that you've noted. But I think that when tuition is married with very robust financial aid, so that we can make sure that the opportunities presented by the university are open to people regardless of their economic backgrounds, that really is the mix that we try to obtain. But there is a relationship between the amount Sacramento provides and the amount charged in tuition. And I wish it were not so. One would wish that college could be free, but This is a public investment. It's an investment in our young people. It's an investment in the next generation. It's a common good that requires public investment.
Great. So we have a lot of questions from the audience, and I've been trying to actively sort them into different bins. There's a set of questions about protest and the role of the university in ensuring free speech, while also a lot of concerns about hate speech and what the university should be doing in that regard. So I'm wondering if you could talk about those kinds of issues.
Yeah, so that's the issue of free speech, particularly on college campuses, has really risen to the top of public consciousness over the last few years. Let me just state the general principle, that the University of California respects the right of free speech regardless of the content of that speech. It may be noxious, it may be abhorrent, but the way to deal with that is with more speech, not by censoring speech. What that means is that when we have certain speakers that we know are there to intentionally provoke a response, that we have to invest in the additional security required for that. Berkeley has done that, and our other institutions are as well. But the other thing that we need to do is to really educate our students about the meaning of the First Amendment and what it entails to actually protect freedom of speech. One of the things we've undertaken is we've created a new National Center for Free Speech and Civic Engagement to really foster academic research and an in-depth look at how we educate the next generation about the First Amendment and to articulate for us some guiding principles that we can use. So, but we start with the basic premise that free speech is a rock-solid value at the university.
Another question that we've seen in the news lately is about sexual harassment policies at the university. And there's two sets of questions here. One is, how do we ensure that students are, and faculty and staff, are protected from sexual harassment? How do we ensure that there is justice, and how do we ensure also that there's due process?
Right. So more than 2 years ago, we began a system-wide examination of how we were handling these cases involving students, involving faculty, involving staff. And we redesigned the framework for how cases are investigated, adjudicated, and sanctioned. And since then, we've been implementing that framework. And that framework embodies due process for the complainant, due process for the accused. These are oftentimes difficult cases. They need to be investigated in a thorough way. They need to be handled promptly. And the parties need to be kept involved and apprised of what's going on. And so that's what we strive to do with our revised framework.
Okay, great. You noted the diversity of the university's student population. Today, the Attorney General is in Sacramento. The federal government has filed lawsuits against some of the actions California has taken to try to protect undocumented immigrants in our state. And you've been very vocal about the university's role in protecting DACA students. So I'm wondering if you could reflect on both what's happening in Sacramento and the federal actions, and then bring it down to what the university is doing. I'm asking you to put on your hat as the former Secretary of Homeland Security and as well as your current role as President of the University of California.
Well, With respect to Attorney General Sessions, I'm speaking as an individual now. I think it was reasonably foreseeable that he would file some sort of court action to try to stop California from doing what a state is entitled to do, which is to establish the policies and practices of its own law enforcement agencies. And that states cannot be commandeered by the federal government to do the federal government's work. That will be fought out in court. Meantime, we are fighting for our DACA students. DACA was a program I initiated as Secretary of Homeland Security to provide deferred action for young people brought here as children. The average age of a DACA recipient came into the United States when they were 6 years old. They've grown up here. They've gone to school here. They've gotten admitted to the University of California. They've done everything we've asked of them. The only difference is they are undocumented. President Trump last fall announced that he was rescinding that program, although he did say he had love in his heart for DACA recipients. But meanwhile, they should be prepared to be deported. I don't know how those things go together. The Board of Regents of the University of California, filed a lawsuit to enjoin that rescission. We obtained that injunction. That injunction remains in place while the government is appealing the lower court's decision. In the meantime, we are supporting legal services for our undocumented students and other support services for them, because they really are under attack now. It's a tremendously stressful time for them.
So we're going to switch gears a little bit here. You often hear that state support of the university is relatively low. Many people think that the university is no longer really a public institution, but that it is a publicly supported institution. And I think you already, to some extent, made the claim for why the public needs a public research university. But I'm wondering if you could address concerns or feelings that a lot of people have that the university isn't so public anymore. And partly that's, I think, from information they get that a lot of the university resources come from non-government entities. But also, I think it's a concern people have that the university is floating away from being a public institution.
Yeah, so we are and always will be a public institution. But we are a public institution that is challenged to make sure that we have the kind of resources required to be able to conduct the kind of education, research, public service that are our three missions. And so we are increasing our fundraising from private parties. We're very grateful for that philanthropy. I think philanthropy on behalf of the university is a great addition. We're also doing more with our own generated intellectual property and revenues from that. But we remain at heart California's university. And what I want to do today is to say this is a university with a proud past and a bright future, but it does require public support.
The Master Plan for Higher Education, which was established in 1960 and still to a large extent governs the differentiation between our public segments in California's higher education systems, and to a large extent also outlines what the eligibility standards should be for high school students as they seek to enter the University of California and the California State University system, the top 1/8 for UC in the top 1/3 of high school graduates eligible for CSU. This is a very long-winded question. Had a subtitle for the master plan, which is the Master Plan for Higher Education in California 1960 to 1975. And yet, those eligibility levels haven't changed very much. The responsibilities of the different systems hasn't changed very much. There have been some suggestions for change, and I'm wondering and would love to hear your perspective on this. For example, the California Community Colleges now have a pilot program where they are offering applied bachelor's degrees in certain areas. The California State University has a couple doctorate programs. Mm-hmm. So there is some question about whether that division of responsibility still works for today. So I'd ask, like you to answer that one first, and then the second part of that, I'd like you to answer the question about the eligibility levels of high school graduates and UC being staying at or near the top 1/8.
Yeah, so I actually think the master plan in its way was a work of genius and has provided California really with the best public higher education system in the country. And I say that as, you know, governor of former governor of a neighboring state, where I would have coveted one of the UC campuses to come to Arizona, as most governors would. But the genius in it was recognizing that all higher education is not the same, and to divide it into logical segments to avoid unnecessary overlap and redundancy. That, you know, universal access to community college, and then the transfer process that I referenced in my talk, the top third of students being eligible for CSU, top 1/8 for UC, that has worked relatively well. And so I think any talk of the master plan, if it is to be revised, we need to ask the question, well, what would make it better? How would we actually improve upon it? And there may be some areas on the margins that can be adjusted. But I think the overall structure of the plan is very sound.
There's a very popular discussions when you read about higher education in the popular press and in other places, that higher education, as it's been traditionally delivered, is a dinosaur. And that the world is changing. And now, rather than degrees, we need badges that tell us, tell employers what you know. At PPIC, we've been doing a lot of work looking at labor market outcomes, and we're dubious about some of those ideas. But on the other hand, the world is changing, and we do live in a more fast-paced economy, a more technical economy. I'm wondering how you think the university can adapt to that kind of change, given that it does have a structure that's based on a very old, but I would also argue successful approach to gaining knowledge and to educating citizens.
So I think that there's always a temptation to look at the next shiny car and say, well, that's it. You know, that's where the solution lies to whatever the problem may be. I do believe that the university needs to do, be very intentional and aggressive in terms of online education offerings. I actually think that being able to offer classes online that students at one campus can take from another campus would enrich the UC and does enrich the UC experience for our students. I do think that exploring non-residential options, meaning options to get educated without living on camp, physically on campus, enhancing study abroad, enhancing our programs in Washington, D.C., and Sacramento, and the like. I think that's all part of the ongoing evolution of the University of California. You know, there's been talk about being able to get a bachelor's degree in 3 years and not four. Our faculty have actually gone through our most popular majors and have, identified programs that would enable a student to leave in 3 years and not four. They usually require some summer, which, if for students who have to work, that's a problem. And we need Cal grants to expand into covering summer session, by the way. Those are available at the option of the student. Quite frankly, most of our students enjoy being at the university, and they want to stay.
Too long.
Have you ever been on one of our campuses? I mean, who wouldn't want to stay? I think the goal, as I said in my talk, ought to be to graduate more of our students in 4 years, which would produce enough undergraduates as if we had opened another large campus. And so that's where I think our focus ought to be.
Are you worried about the humanities?
I believe that education in humanities and the arts is an essential part of being a well-educated person. And I think the goal of the University of California is not just to produce a well-educated worker for whatever that first job is, which you're going to change a number of times over the course of a career, but a well-educated person who appreciates historical context, who's developed the art of critical thinking, who can articulate his or her thoughts well in writing or verbally. And I believe that humanities and the arts are an essential part of that. So we will always have a strong humanities and arts set of offerings at the university.
So I'm not sure this UC grad majored in the humanities, but this is a question about Jerry Brown and what it has been like working with him. And I'm going to add to that, what are your thoughts about perhaps new opportunities for the university and working with a new governor?
So I think the governor and I have a good professional relationship. Try to work through our differences. Obviously, I was somewhat disappointed in the governor's budget. He knew we would be for higher ed. I think Tim White at Cal State University System was disappointed as well. This is a year when California's public coffers are running well. It's an ideal time to invest in higher education, and I detect just a note of skepticism by the governor about that. I don't know what the root of that skepticism is. But the governor has a major voice to say in higher education in this state, and the next governor does. So I think that I'm listening very carefully to what the candidates for governor are saying, if they say anything about higher education and their support of it. And I hope those in the audience will as well.
So now we have another question returning to some of the difficulties that students face in affording higher education. And this one specifically asks what the university is doing with respect to housing shortages and especially housing problems in high-rent areas, Bay Area, of course, and coastal Southern California as well.
So we have embarked on a housing initiative to add a minimum of 14,000 beds to the university by the year 2020, and we're going to meet or exceed that target. When I speak with students, housing comes in ahead of tuition, by the way. And I think that reflects the high cost of housing in Berkeley, in San Francisco, in Westwood, in Santa Cruz, places where our campuses are. We are in a number of public-private partnerships, expanding our own housing offerings, and want to get those online as soon as we can.
So that kind of raises the question of town-gown relationships. Are there campuses that want to grow, that want to provide housing, but have a hard time doing so because the local community doesn't want it? And how do you address that? Or does the university have the independence to build its own housing?
No, we always, we're always working with the local communities that surround the campus, and it's important that we have those good relationships. And yes, we do have difficulties in some of our campuses in trying to grow and meeting resistance from the local community. And you just, just try to negotiate those out and to reach a fair accommodation. We need to grow. We are good economic generators for communities. We're a job creator for communities, so we're a good thing to have in the community and a good thing to have grow in the community. But we need to understand some of the local community reticence and, like I said, try to be as accommodating as we can.
This question is, a lot of growth is in inland California. Where's the next UC campus going to be?
Yeah. Well, we're still building out Merced.
Yes, I know.
And so we want to get that project done. The current plan is that the build out of the campus will be complete in 2020, and it will have 10,000 students by then. Currently has about 6,500, and then can grow beyond that. Right now, and it's important to recognize that we are building Merced without state funding. We don't have any state bond financing for Merced. The UC has kind of done it on its own. And so that's, doing another campus that way would be extraordinarily difficult. So we want to build out Merced and get Merced right. It's a terrific campus.
PPIC statewide survey shows that a majority of Californians like the idea of a Higher Education Bond Act. Do you have a role to play there? Where's the governor on that? Do you think that could be a partial solution, at least, to some of the capital expenditure problems the university faces?
Oh, yes. I think a higher education bond would be a great statement by the people of California about the value they place on higher education. And we're already meeting with some in the legislature who are interested in moving something along. Realistically, it will be an issue for the next governor because it won't be going on the ballot this fall, so it'll be after the next governor takes office. So, but yes, I think that would be a terrific idea and would take a lot of pressure off the University of California.
And you see that coming up sometime in the next few years then?
One hopes, yes.
Okay, great. And then finally, we have one last question, which is very forward-thinking, which I think is an appropriate way to end. Where do you see the university moving over the next 10 to 15 years? And what would you like to see it look like in 10 or 15 years from now? Or let's go 150 years from now.
Yeah. I think we should have healthy growth. I think we should be focused on increasing the diversity in our faculty, our staff, and our student body. We should be known as a research-intensive knowledge creator. We should be known for innovations and how we deliver education. We should be known for the excellence of our students and what they accomplish. I think to a large degree, that's how we're known now, but we want to continue that trajectory. And, I come on the shoulders of presidents and chancellors who came before me. I think in a way I get to claim credit for the work that they did, but the work continues, and it's a pleasure and a privilege to do it.
So thank you so much, President Napolitano, for your speech and for your comments.
Thank you.
Right, no, not yet. I get to do just three things now. First of all, wish the University of California a very happy 150th anniversary. I get to say, go Bears. And I get to do this, which I really like to do. We are now adjourned.